Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome back to a brand new week of Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your well-rested host. Very happy to be back in the studio today. Thanks to everyone who filled in for me, including Chris Check, who I heard it was a terrible struggle when Chris was here. I don't know, Trent, did you do any days with Chris? No?
In the words of Colonel Klink, I know nothing.
Oh, okay. All right.
Really, I actually don't know anything.
Okay. So. That's funny. Follow up the Colonel Klink with the sincere,
in all seriousness, I know nothing.
I know nothing. Today we're reaching out to pro-choice folks. If you're pro-choice, well, maybe you're convinced that a woman's right to choose abortion must be preserved in law. We welcome your call today. Today is the 45th anniversary of the Roe versus Wade decision, in which the United States Supreme Court created a legal right to abortion essentially on demand throughout pregnancy everywhere in the United States. Perhaps you're a pro-choice person and you celebrate this day, or maybe you're just someone who's personally opposed to abortion but believe it should be legal. Well, this entire program is for you today. Why are you pro-choice? 888-318-7884. If you'd like to answer that question for us and engage in some discussion about it, why are you pro-choice? 888-318-7884. Taking your questions today, Catholic Answers apologist Trent Horn. Trent's a convert to Catholicism, the author of many books, including most recently The Case for Catholicism from Ignatius Press. But today we focus on his book a little bit on persuasive pro-life and 20 answers about abortion. One of the books from the 20 Answers Catholic series. Trent, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Always glad to be here.
And glad to know that you actually know nothing. But when you say that, you're in reference to Chris Check's fill-in hosting while I was away.
That's correct. But I'm sure it did well. I have complete confidence in the boss.
Yeah, well, if you're going to have confidence
and,
in someone.
And in Chris Check as well.
Yeah. So. Well, if Chris Check is not the boss, who is? I should say that your book, Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is very accessible pro-life book, very helpful pro-life book. But you also have the video, Making the Case for Life. I should also say that anyone who calls today and gets on the air, if we can get their address, we're going to send them one of these two. They get their choice of Persuasive Pro-Life, the book, or Making the Case for Life, the video. For those of you who don't get through, they're both on sale for $5. Anyway, just go to shop.catholic.com and you can have each of them for $5. 888-318-7884, the number. Trent, you have a post on, is it Catholic Answers Magazine?
Yes.
It's called 5 Myths About Roe versus Wade. What do you mean myths about Roe versus Wade?
Well, simply that, and I thought it was appropriate to post this now, given that it's the 45th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, that many people don't understand the decision. They don't understand it, what it did, the background leading up to it, what's come from it. And so, given that it's a big part of American legal history, there are a lot of myths that need to be cleared up. So this article, I talk about 5 very common ones associated with the Supreme Court's decision that made abortion legal in the United States, or at least prevented us from outlawing abortion.
And you start with this idea that abortion was only made legal in the first 3 months, or what's sometimes called the first trimester of pregnancy. That's why is that a myth?
Well, it's a myth because Roe divides pregnancy up into 3 trimesters and sets a legal framework for each of them, saying that abortion cannot be restricted in any way in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy, or the first 3 months, the first trimester. It says you could restrict it in the second trimester if it's for a woman's health. And it says in the third trimester, the last 3 months of pregnancy, you can outlaw abortion, but you have to provide an exception if a woman's life or health is in danger. The problem with this is that the Supreme Court's companion case, Roe's companion case that was decided at the same time, Doe versus Bolton, defined health. What is health? Health is anything physical, emotional, psychological, familial, or age-related. It's an exception so large you can drive a large truck through it, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's almost impossible to outlaw any abortions because you can almost find a physician anywhere who can say a woman has a health problem. I mean, Dr. Warren Hearn, who does late-term abortions in Colorado, has himself argued in print that the fact that a child is unwanted is a health reason, that just having an unwanted pregnancy itself is a health reason and justifies abortion. So, and really, Roe doesn't use that trimester framework anymore ever since Planned Parenthood versus Casey. So now it's just basically past viability. You know, you in theory could outlaw abortion, but with the exceptions that are involved, in practice, you really can't. It's legal through all 9 months of pregnancy for virtually any reason.
And you don't cover this in here, but that's unusual throughout the world. Even we think of like these libertine European countries like France or something that they don't have these laws. They don't.
No, most Western democracies like countries in Europe, now there's some that restrict abortion a lot, like Ireland and Poland, only allow it in very, very difficult cases, like if a woman's life is in danger. But in other countries like France or Spain or Germany, it's usually cut off at the second trimester or at the end of the second trimester. The only countries that allow elective abortion, there's only a handful that allow it through all 9 months of pregnancy for basically any reason. I think China and North Korea are some of the handful that do. And we ignominiously are one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. But you say it's also a myth that a majority of Americans support Roe versus Wade.
Yeah, this one's kind of a half-truth. I mean, I've seen this hashtag circulating on social media saying, oh, 7 in 10 for Roe, 7 in 10 for Roe, that 70% of Americans support Roe versus Wade. And I link in the piece to a 2013 poll that show, 70% say you should not overturn Roe versus Wade. But in that same poll, 41% of people said they didn't know enough about Roe versus Wade to say if they didn't like it or not.
Wow.
And in another poll, 56% of young people did not know Roe versus Wade was about abortion.
Oh, Lord. Wow.
So it's like you'll ask people, should Roe v. Wade overturn? No, they shouldn't overturn it. Well, what's it about? Nah, I don't really know. It's just people don't want something overturned, or they don't want something that's legal to become illegal. But if they knew, but the thing is, you can smash this statistic in a heartbeat. You know, 7 in 10 are in favor of Roe. Well, Roe versus Wade allows abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason.
Uh-huh.
Actually, that's only 1 in 4. Only 1 in 4 people wants abortion, wants no restrictions on abortion. And some polls put that as low as like 15%. So the majority of people would like abortion restricted more than Roe versus Wade allows.
888-318-7884, our number, as you can probably guess from the tenor of our conversation. Trent and I are both pro-life people. But we are more than happy to take your calls. Matter of fact, we're asking for your call if you are a pro-choice person, if you support abortion, if you see abortion as maybe an inalienable right or a right of some sort, and you believe it's a right that should be protected. We would like to have a conversation with you about that. 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH, if you prefer it that way. Let's try one more myth before we have to take a break. But among the myths here is hundreds of thousands of women's lives have been saved because we no longer have back alley abortions.
Right. And there's this idea, you would have heard Walter Cronkite and other people saying 5,000 to 10,000 women every year were dying from back alley abortions prior to Roe versus Wade. And this simply isn't true. Bernard Nathanson, who helped to make abortion legal, and he later converted and became pro-life. And in his memoirs, he admitted, we made up those statistics because they were useful to get the laws passed. But that just wasn't the case. Mary Calderon, a former president of Planned Parenthood, in 1960, she said 90% of abortions are being done in doctors' offices. When I checked the Centers for Disease Control in 1972, I think it said something like there were 39 women who had died from illegal abortions, or from abortion in general, 25 were from legal abortions. Now, any death from abortion is tragic, whether it is a child or the mother. It's tragic. But the answer to this problem is not to make it legal so it's safer for a big person to kill a little person. Abortion is not safe today because half the people involved in the procedure die. So the answer to keeping people safe is to make abortion illegal, not to keep it legal.
888-318-7884, the number. Trent Horn, the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, is our guest this hour. If you are pro-choice, if you are in favor of legalized abortion, give us a call on this Roe versus Wade anniversary. We'd love to talk about it with you. Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and his DVD, Making the Case for Life, available for just $5 each. That's a savings of over 70%. Both the book and the DVD were made specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue, and to give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of the book, Persuasive Pro-Life, or the DVD, Making the Case for Life, for just $5 each, just call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Is it possible to know when life begins? Shouldn't women be able to control their own bodies? What if a pregnant woman's life is in danger? In 20 Answers, Abortion, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more. You'll deepen your understanding of this critical moral issue and gain the knowledge you need to explain it to others. 20 Answers Abortion is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. On this 45th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, we are sharing some of the myths about Roe versus Wade, as Trent Horn has written about in Catholic Answers Magazine online, that you can get by going to Catholic.com. And we are asking you, if you are a pro-choice person, why are you pro-choice? If you can call and tell us why you're pro-choice, we'd love to have a conversation about it. We do. We try to keep everything civil, and when we are on our very best behavior, beyond civil, charitable. So we're not looking for fights or that kind of thing. We want to have conversations. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Trent, I know we got a couple more of those myths to get to, but I don't want to shortchange any callers or let any callers go that want to get through. So we'll get back to the remaining myths, but let's go to John in Cleveland, Ohio. Watching on YouTube. Thanks for watching on YouTube, John. Your question why are you pro-choice?
I'm pro-choice. I mean, I could change my mind. I guess I called my show, but I'm pro-choice because a couple reasons. One reason is I speak to a couple of friends and scientists, actually, and they said that there's no proof that actually the fetus is an organism at any time as an organism.
You spoke to a scientist, John, who said there's no proof a fetus is an organism?
Well, I mean, he was a college student.
Okay. Well, I would say that's a very misinformed college student. What is a fetus?
He says it's just a blob of cells, that they're not organisms, because organisms only could survive, meaning of an organism, something that could survive by itself, and a fetus cannot survive by itself, so therefore it's not an organism.
Okay, well, that's actually not the definition of an organism. An organism is an individual living thing. For example, is a parasite an organism?
I don't know. I'm not really a scientist.
Well, let's say, do you know what a parasite is?
I'm not really sure. What is a parasite? I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. A parasite would be an organism that feeds off of a host in order to live. So it's an organism, but it's dependent on other organisms to live. So if you eat poorly cooked food, for example, there might be a tapeworm or something in there, and then it gets in your body, and it sucks nutrients from your body to live. And so it's certainly an organism. It's alive, and it's growing. I mean, the unborn is absolutely an organism because it's growing and it's developing in the womb. The fetus is this, like, I would challenge you to do this. Go online and look up the definition of a fetus. And any medical dictionary, any biology textbook you come across, and in Persuasive Pro-Life, the book we will send you if you like it, in there I put what the definition of a fetus is. Fetus is the stage of development in the life of a human organism. You can only have a stage of development if you're an organism. Like skin cells and cancer cells, they don't have stages of development like embryo, fetus, or toddler. Only organisms do. So fetus refers to the time in the life of a human being from 8 weeks after they're conceived until birth. And what I'm saying is that it's wrong to kill a human being just because they're at that stage in the development of their life. And I think we should value human beings through every stage, whether they're an embryo, a fetus, an infant, a toddler, or an adult. So does that make sense?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. But, I mean, is it universal that a fetus is an organism? I mean, universally, is it universal? I mean, if I go to a science book, would it say that's an organism, like a science book, like...
Absolutely. Look in Persuasive Pro-Life. I cite several developmental biology texts, and there is one text I remember citing. I don't remember right off the top of my head the title of it, but I do remember that one of the chapters in the book, I think it was Scott might be the gentleman who wrote the book. It was his last name. I don't remember, but I remember that the title of one of the chapters was Fertilization, the Beginning of a New Organism. So, yeah, if you look in there, and so why don't you stay on the line, and we will get your information from our call screener, and you can go to Persuasive Pro-Life. There's a chapter called "This Answering the Skeptics," and there I have a list of things like Langmann's embryology, human embryology and teratology by O'Rahilly and Mueller, and several other textbooks and science books that are listed there that is beyond doubt. Even pro-choice advocates who are sophisticated, who know the issue, will agree the unborn is a human organism. There is absolutely no doubt on that question. And I would say just look up the terms embryo and fetus. They refer to stages of development in the life of a human being or a human organism. So I hope that's helpful for you.
Thank you.
Okay, John, now don't go anywhere. Hang on, because we're giving away a free copy of Persuasive Pro-Life, the book, or Making the Case for Life, the video, to everybody who gets through today. So you got a free copy coming to you. Matter of fact, I think John said he's open to the possibility that a fetus is life. So I think we should send him both. Can you do that, Nick? Can you send him both? Nick says yes.
You are giving away everything here.
That's my first time ever doing that when you're on, Trent, giving away your stuff for free.
There you go. Yeah.
888-318-7884 is the number. The question of the hour, why are you pro-choice? If you are a pro-choice person, we are happy to speak with you about it. Trent Horn is our guest, and we go now to Leanne in Charleston, South Carolina. Leanne, why are you pro-choice? Leanne?
Hello?
Oh, hi, Leanne. Why are you pro-choice?
Oh, sorry. I didn't know. I couldn't hear. Well, I was explaining, I guess, to your producer the reason why I've felt that it was important to make an issue of it is that, you know, in Charleston, South Carolina, Nikki Haley insisted on having the post 20-week abortion law passed, in Columbia. So prior to that, I contacted the Lauren Salser is the reporter, and told her my story, which was I was 5.5 months pregnant, and I had a child that had been diagnosed with anencephaly and ultrasound 18. Therefore, it was 100% terminal, mm-hmm. and that was before they passed that law. So at that point, that was back in 2010, but yet TRICARE would not cover the procedure. So I was told that I would have to go to Georgia if I wanted to go to a facility where Planned Parenthood funded any of it, or they could take care of it at MUSC, which is a very famous hospital in Charleston, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So we were obviously devastated. We elected to have the procedure at MUSC, but we had to pay 100%. You know, on a credit card. So things like policymakers consider the consequences when they're passing these laws.
Okay. Firstly, Anne, I want to say that I'm very sorry to hear that your child was diagnosed with anencephaly, which is a condition that prevents, for our listeners who don't know, it's a condition that prevents the brain from continuing to develop. And so the child, their development stops, and they'll die within a few weeks, months, shortly thereafter. And Trisomy 18, which I believe is called Edwards syndrome, that causes holes in the child's heart and lungs to develop. And so it sounds like your child had a very short life ahead of them because of the negative medical complications that arose. And I'm sorry that you had to go through this, because I'm sure before you received this diagnosis, you would have never considered having an abortion.
No, of course not. Right. I just wanted to clarify that the trisomy 18, that's like a severe form of spina bifida.
Okay.
Had the child had one diagnosis or the other, there would have been very like a short-term survival rate. But the combination of the two,
right,
I was advised by the doctors at MUSC that it was a 0% chance of survival.
Right. Sure. So I understand how difficult that would be to go through, but here's how I think we should look at the situation whenever we have something like this. And as a parent, I can definitely sympathize. If your child is sick, you want to provide comfort for them. You want to help them as much as you can. But I don't think that that does not justify taking an action that directly ends their life, or what would be called mercy killing. So for example, suppose we had like a 3-year-old who was diagnosed with something like Tay-Sachs disease, a degenerative brain disease, or they're diagnosed with some other terminal disease and they're going to die in a few months. So let's say we have a born child, like a toddler, who has a terminal illness. Do you think we should provide that child comfort and let them pass away naturally? Or do you think it'd be okay to directly kill that 3-year-old through something like euthanasia?
I mean, I don't think that the situations are entirely similar. I think that it's a decision between the parents and the doctor, and you're never looking to euthanize anyone. You're always trying to consider, you know, what is the child going through? How are you going to make the things, you know, go to where they experience the least pain possible?
That's what euthanasia is. It's mercy killing. It's the idea of ending someone's life so they don't have to suffer. And so I understand this was something emotional and difficult you went through, but it doesn't justify, however, doing this for any child, whether they're born or unborn. I also have another question for you. I would wonder about, do you think abortions at 18 weeks or 20 weeks, would you be in favor of abortions being done even if the child is perfectly healthy?
I mean, there are already laws that have set, you know, a respectable time period. I mean, now they're getting more conservative. If you still think that my decision was, quote, a mercy killing, that is not the scenario. The movement was already, you know, beginning to cease. I was spotting, if I had not been able to put it on a credit card or drive to another state, they were asking me to walk around until I spontaneously, I guess, went into preterm labor or self-aborted. Or, I mean, that's dangerous on the mother. You're having a fetus slowly dying inside of you.
Right.
Not to mention the mental
Right, right.
And emotional when you're still a functioning citizen with a full-time 9-to-5 and another child to take care of.
Right. I understand that that's very, very difficult. And the Catholic Church even teaches that if a child is in the process of dying and it's late during this procedure, especially 19 or 20 weeks, which is around the time of viability, that it's possible that if the child is dying and a person's going into labor already, that one can facilitate that labor for, you know, to help protect the mother's health, provided that you're not directly ending the child's life. But once again, I think we have to take a step back and say, would we treat a 3-year-old, a 1-year-old the same way that we would end their life just because they have a terminal illness? Now, it's awful to know a child is dying. We wouldn't want a child to suffer. But we cross a line we shouldn't cross when we decide that we're going to directly end their life to ease their suffering, because that leads to euthanasia. It leads to all sorts of things that doctors shouldn't do. Doctors should heal, treat pain. They should not kill their patients, including the unborn ones. So I hope our viewers will pray for you, and you'll
and hang on,
what
Leanne.
About.
Hang, don't go anywhere, Leanne. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. Why are you pro-choice on Catholic Answers Live? And Leanne, hang.
Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
You know, I was raised Catholic, but then went to the other side and tried to commit suicide a couple of times several years ago. My Savior happened to be a Catholic priest here locally, and I wanted to say, though, surrounding myself with people like yourself and this radio station. This morning I felt kind of alone, and then I was like, oh yeah, EWTN. Oh, I love it.
Did the Catholic Church add books to the Bible? Or did Protestants remove 7 books from the Old Testament? Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger takes you on a fact-filled tour through the history of the Bible, revealing the whole story behind the lost books of the Protestant Old Testament. With the latest information and discourse on crucial issues, Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger is a book that belongs in the library of every serious student of Scripture. And as a special bonus, if you order online, we'll add an ebook copy of 15 Myths, Mistakes, and Misrepresentations About the Deuterocanon to your order absolutely free. Get your free ebook today. Order your copy of Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger by logging on to our online shop at shop.catholic.com.
Just like the saints of the Counter-Reformation, our own souls are in constant need of reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. We struggle with sin. We become distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. In Reform Yourself, Sean McAfee shows you how these magnificent saints can be guides to your own personal transformation. We all need to reform our souls. Let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Trent Horn. Trent is the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue and Making the Case for Life. A video, well, I shouldn't say he's the author of the video. He's the, what's the word for that? Superstar of the video. And we're happy to send you either of these. If you are a caller who gets through on the line today, we want to send them to you. And if you are pro-choice, our question for this hour is, why are you pro-choice? We asked this in part because it is the 45th anniversary of the Roe versus Wade decision. A decision that I suppose the word controversial doesn't quite sum it up. It's in every sense has been a controversial and difficult decision. It's not one that we support. We are, in fact, pro-life, but we would love to talk with you if you are a pro-choice person and would like to tell us why you are pro-choice. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. We were talking about the myths of Roe versus Wade before. Trent, did you want to follow up with our conversation? I'm sorry that we had to interrupt you in the midst of your conversation with Leanne before, but some breaks are hard breaks, and that was a hard one. I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add to that or if you wanted to continue with the myths of Roe versus Wade.
No, I'm happy to continue with that, though. I think that what Liam brought up is certainly a very difficult case.
Yeah.
And what makes it difficult, though, is, of course, the emotions that are involved when a person is receives a diagnosis that their child essentially has a terminal illness or terminal condition, and that the child is going to die somewhere in the pregnancy or shortly thereafter. And so what do we do in this circumstance? And there are going to be doctors who recommend abortion. And that's understandable in the sense that abortion is legal. And so doctors will usually choose options that incur the least amount of liability for them. And so ending a pregnancy, it always reduces liability for them versus continuing a pregnancy and facilitating a birth. So there's something important for our listeners to remember. Doctors are not infallible. Doctors are not always going to make the best moral decisions. And says, well, a doctor told me to do this. Doctors might be experts in medicine, but they are not experts in morality. That is why we get ethics committees to second guess and check what they do. And doctors disagree amongst themselves. There are Catholic doctors who I would say, if anyone listening has been diagnosed with something like a pregnancy with anencephaly, spina bifida, any kind of condition that could be terminal, go and make sure you get a second opinion from a Catholic OBGYN and a Catholic doctor who specializes in high-risk pregnancies. Because the bottom line is, we have to maintain the same moral principle. If a child is dying, we should provide comfort for that child to allow them to pass naturally. We should not directly kill the child. We would not directly kill a three-year-old who is dying from an injury or a disease. We shouldn't do the same to a child in the womb. Now, there may come a point where the child dies in the womb, and if the child is dead, they may be removed with an abortion procedure. But this is not a direct abortion because the child is already alive. The abortion doesn't kill the child. The disease has killed them. The body is now just being removed in order to protect the woman's health and life. But if the child is alive and, you know, they're dying, even though it's very, very difficult, we cannot kill someone just because they are at the end of their life. If that's something we cross, it becomes a very dangerous principle in medicine.
It does. It seems to me important that you say that too, because I think there are very many women, very many couples who, in a sense, are victimized by doctors who this is the easiest course for the doctor, and so the doctor says, abort the child.
Oh, absolutely, Cy. And especially that they're like doctors who think that maybe they could bring a child to term healthy and deliver them to be healthy. There are doctors who have done that who have been sued for wrongful birth.
Yeah, right.
So they've been sued that, you know, if they failed, for example, if a doctor fails to communicate a diagnosis that a child has Down syndrome, for example, the child is born with Down syndrome and they fail to communicate that fact, they could be sued for wrongful life or wrongful birth. Wrongful life especially is a hideous phrase.
Isn't it?
That the idea is that, well, I would have aborted this child if you would have told me. So, doctor, you're at fault here and I'm suing you for not giving me information that would have impelled me to have an abortion. So doctors have been sued for wrongful life, but hardly any. I've never heard of a doctor being sued for wrongful abortion, you know, for aborting a child and it turned out they didn't have Down syndrome.
Right.
So as I said, as the pregnancy continues and you give birth, the liabilities and risks for physicians increase. So some will want to cut their losses and try to take the least risky path, which for many of them will consider to be abortion. And people of good faith and good conscience are misled by these medical quote-unquote professionals.
888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. If you are pro-choice and would like to share with us why you are pro-choice, we are here and happy to take that call. 888-318-7884. And, you know, I suppose there's the other level too, and I want to get to two more of your myths and then back to callers, Trent. But I suppose there's also the fact that a doctor can make us feel better about a decision that we maybe in our heart know we shouldn't make. We're responsible as parents for our children and for our choices and all that. And the medical community is so confused and conflicted and has so many different motivations here. You have to take responsibility when you go in there. When a doctor says, you know.
You do. And that's why doctors, you know, they have to always. That's why it's important to get second opinions on lots of things. But especially when you know, hey, wait, this guy is recommending something that violates my faith, my conscience, seems to be a bad idea, go and get advice from somebody else. And I think it's just important to do that. And that's why we have to be well-formed. Those of us who are pro-life, who believe all life has dignity, basic rights, and we should protect human beings from the moment that they begin to exist until the end of their lives, we should protect them. And that was historically in medicine, all doctors believed that. The Hippocratic Oath, one of the first medical oaths, said do no harm was one of its major points. And another point in the Hippocratic Oath from the ancient physician Hippocrates was, I will not prescribe a pessary or anything to induce abortion.
Yeah.
Of course, that's really changed a lot today.
Boy, has it. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Another myth about Roe versus Wade before we go back to callers. Roe versus Wade is a sound legal argument for abortion.
Yeah, this point is actually, even many scholars who defend legal abortion or who are pro-choice don't believe Roe versus Wade has a very good argument at all. The problem is that Roe grounds abortion. Roe versus Wade does not answer the question about whether the unborn is a human person. It's agnostic on that point. It just basically says, well, there's a right to privacy, and the right to privacy includes medical decisions. Abortion's a medical decision. Therefore, abortion should be legal, and abortion laws in the past were just meant to protect women, and now abortion's safe, so we don't need them anymore. Historically, that's wrong. We can tell from the very first abortion laws were passed in the U.S. because it was considered an act of homicide to obtain abortion and to perform abortion on a pregnant woman because you're killing the child. And second, the right to privacy itself is not in the Constitution. It's considered to be in the penumbra, you know, this ethereal set of rights outside of the Constitution that first showed up in Griswold v. Connecticut that said states had to be able to sell contraceptives to married couples if they requested it. So that's why in the blog, in the article, I talk about how Edward Lazarus, who was a former clerk to the Supreme Court justice who issued the Roe versus Wade decision, that he said even that the case is essentially indefensible.
888-318-7884 is our number. We'll go now to Vicky in Pensacola, Florida, listening on 103.3 FM. Vicky, why are you pro-choice?
Hello?
Hi Vicky. You are on the air with Trent Horn. Why are you pro-choice?
I'm pro-choice. I'm not about these late-term abortions. I think if you can have your own decision to do what you want with your own body. And I really am offended at some of the things you guys have said, especially to your last caller, which was obviously a health concern. You call it basically murder, what she had to do, because she opted to, and it is easing suffering for a newborn baby. I don't know if you've ever been into a NICU, and some of those babies are truly suffering.
Vicky, in that caller, Vicky, I said that the act that they took part in was a mercy killing, that the child is dying, but it had not died yet. And so an abortion that intervened would have ended the child's life for reasons to alleviate the child's suffering. Isn't that exactly what happened?
Rather it be born and then have to suffer a death.
Vicky, Vicky, I would ask you this question in response to that. I don't think a child should be killed just because they're at the end of their life. You mentioned that you've seen children in NICU units, newborn babies, who are sick, who are suffering. Do you think that we should directly kill a newborn baby in a NICU unit because they are sick or they're suffering?
We'll do it to an animal.
Should we do it to a newborn baby?
Because we say we're reducing their suffering. We'll let people die from cancer. I had a friend that had brain cancer. It was horrible for the last couple of days of life because they would not give her a shot to let her go to sleep. She lived her last few years, or fat last few days, totally blind and horribly suffering. I think that's more of a crime of humanity.
So Vicki, let me understand where you're coming from, because I agree that if someone is dying, if they're at the end of their life and they're in pain, it is acceptable to give them pain control medication, even if that medication might indirectly shorten their life. But human beings, we euthanize animals because we don't feel like animals are worthy of medical treatment. It's easier just to kill them. But we shouldn't treat humans like animals. So I'm going to pose the question directly to you again, because I think your view on abortion is tied up in a larger view on human life, which is this. Do you think we should directly kill a human being just because they are suffering?
Yes.
Okay, let's see. Where would you draw the line? If somebody... let me ask you a question, Vicki. Where would you ever draw the line and not do that? Let's say somebody has been in an accident and they're in a wheelchair and they don't want to live the rest of their life that way, and they ask us to kill them. Should we comply with their request?
I think it's a personal choice, and I don't think that bringing the Catholic Church into it should, unless they have an unbound amount of faith and they want to live, I think it's a personal choice.
So, Vicki, if someone in a wheelchair wants to die, we should help them kill themselves?
I think Dr. Gavachian had a decent point in some of his mercy killing.
Did you say Dr. Kevorkian, Dr. Death?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I am very hesitant to want to take advice from a man who himself admitted he got a thrill and excitement staring into the eyes of people the moment they died. So Dr. Kevorkian is a very... he doesn't really deserve the title of doctor, frankly, unless it's appended to his popular nickname he supported, which is Dr. Death. I hope that this has been a helpful conversation, Vicki. Unfortunately, we've reached an impasse, though I think that from people who are listening can see our principles for how we treat born people are going to follow up for how we treat unborn people. So if you think we should kill born people, if they're suffering in any way, shape, or form, kill a born person, well, then it makes perfect sense. Why not kill an unborn child for that reason? And so we see what Pope St. John Paul II said, that when you support legal abortion, it doesn't stop at abortion. It creates what he called a culture of death. It creates a culture that values death and ending suffering more than valuing life, no matter how weak or helpless it may be. And as pro-lifers, we oppose abortion and euthanasia because we want to cultivate a culture of life, not a culture of death.
Thank you very much, Vicki, for that call. We do have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. Trent Horn, the question of the hour, why are you pro-choice? If you'd like to answer that question for us, give us a call, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back after this with Catholic Answers Live.
Why are you pro-choice? Call now. Trent is waiting to talk to you.
January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, available for just $5 a copy. That's a savings of over 70%. This book was made specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue, and to give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds, so that together, we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of the book Persuasive Pro-Life for just $5 each, call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Just like the saints of the Counter-Reformation, our own souls are in constant need of reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. We struggle with sin. We become distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. In Reform Yourself, Sean McAfee shows you how these magnificent saints can be guides to your own personal transformation. We all need to reform our souls. Let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is Trent Horn, the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, a book which we are giving away free to any caller who gets through on the line today. Or that caller can opt out of the book and take the video, Making the Case for Life, How to Talk About America's Toughest Issue, Trent Horn's DVD. You can have either one. If you get through, just hang on long enough to give us your address and we'll send it out to you. We go now to Ben in Lauston, Minnesota, listening on the Presence, right? Is the Presence in Minnesota or is that Maine? Hang on a second, Ben. Let me just push the right button here and we'll talk to Ben. I think that's Maine. How are you, Ben? Are you in Maine?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How are you, Cy?
I am well. Is the Presence Radio is in Maine, right?
No. Yeah. The Presence Radio is in Maine. It's Lewiston, Maine.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so you're a pro-choice. Why are you pro-choice, Ben?
I am pro-choice. And I forgive me if I'm a little bit rattled. The call screener asked me why I favored abortion, which I do not.
Okay.
I am staunchly opposed to abortion in any individual situation. But I don't think that just because I have the value system that tells me that life begins at conception and all human life has value, I don't think imposing that value system from a governmental standpoint is the best, most efficient, or most effective way to eliminate the culture of death and turn us towards a culture of life.
Okay. Ben, this is interesting. It seems that you're making a pragmatic argument. I mean, you may also be making a moral argument in that you don't think it's right to put your particular value system into the law. You didn't say that, and we could discuss it if you also feel that way. But you said you didn't think it was the most effective way to reduce abortion. Why do you think that?
Well, because I guess we can look at the last 30 years, right? Or the last few decades, as abortion has become more and more of a prominent issue, mm-hmm. and it's become more and more of a political talking point. It's become a way to ensure a certain demographic of people will vote for your party.
Well, I mean, there's the. I wouldn't say that the pro-life movement or the pro-life argument was created or hinges on getting people to vote a certain way in elections. What's really sad, though, and I don't want to talk about politics too much on the show, but there is certainly one political party in the United States where the vast, vast majority, almost all pro-life advocates, find themselves in. The other major political party, 20, 30 years ago, many people in that party were pro-life. However, that party over the past several few decades has slowly purged its pro-life members so that it's just politically impossible to be someone who's pro-life and be within that party. And, you know, unfortunately, if that's what they're going to do as a party, then that's on them. And people of good conscience who can't support abortion will go with people who do oppose it, even if they disagree with them on some other issues. Because abortion, you're right, abortion isn't the only issue. But then again, slavery wasn't the only issue in 1860, but it was the most important one. I would also say over the past 30 years that where abortion has been legally restricted, where laws have been passed at the local and state level to reduce funding for abortion, where there have been parental notification laws, informed consent laws, when the law has been put with pro-life values in it, those states have seen decreases in abortion. So when we do put pro-life laws into action, I would say it does decrease it. And to me, when something's illegal, most people choose to not do it because most people follow the law. What do you think of that?
I agree. And I think that putting measures in place to expose people to the fact that they do have a choice, I think people sometimes feel funneled towards abortion by the aforementioned culture of death. So I think that not restricting it, but making the resources readily available, which there is a movement to do this. I do just think that when we step too far and we say, okay, well, we have all these measures in place, now let's try to actually make it fundamentally illegal, I think that we break the barrier between church and state, which is good for neither.
How would it, when you say a barrier between church and state, do you, I suppose you're referring to the separation of church and state is actually not in the Constitution. It was in a letter, I think, Thomas Jefferson or another founding father wrote to the Danbury Baptist. But the Constitution does say Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. But how would passing a law that says unborn children cannot be aborted, human beings prior to birth have the same basic legal protections as human beings after birth, how does church and state involved in that at all? It's just a recognition of protecting human life.
It's about how we define life.
Why don't we just use a biological definition? Life, what we're talking about here, are individual members of the human species. And even pro-choice advocates agree fetuses and embryos are individual living members of our species.
That's a great point, and I can't wait to read about it in the book, Trent.
All right. Well, we will happily send you a copy of Persuasive Pro-Life and give our call screener your address, and we will get that sent right off to you. And thank you very much for calling.
Thanks, Ben. You don't even have to ask him what he chose. He chose the book over the video. But you get a choice. If you get through on the line today, we're going to send you either Persuasive Pro-Life or Making the Case for Life. Persuasive Pro-Life is Trent's book. The Making the Case for Life is his video. And all you got to do is get through and then give us your name and address, and we'll send those to you. Kenny in Chickasaw, is that right? Oklahoma, listening on 97.3 FM. You are on with Trent Horn. Your question, your comment, Kenny.
Well, I've got really a comment. I was listening to your show here, and the lady that was talking about Dr. Death and euthanasia and that whole conversation, and I just felt like I wanted to chime in on this one. I'm 41 years old and spent several months in neonatal unit. I was a little over 2 months premature, born in 1976. And I just wanted to make a comment that life is hard, and sometimes depression is hard, and but the bottom line is I am glad that the Lord gave me a chance to live. And that's what I think the whole point is. You got to individualize these babies, and it's not our choice. And the way I see it, I think God is life. So I am pro-life.
Well, thank you so much, Kenny, for offering that comment. And that puts it well, eloquent in its brevity, that yes, life is hard. Life is difficult. And a lot of us have different crosses to bear. But life is also good. And life is always a good thing, even when we have a lot of suffering. And that ultimately, to endure and understand suffering, as the Catechism says, there is no element, part of the problem of evil, that isn't answered by the gospel. That ultimately, our faith gives us the full answer to why evil and suffering happen, and how God has given us the grace to endure that. And that this is but a fleeting, temporary suffering we endure in this veil of tears. And in the next life, we await an eternal weight of glory. Like, this weight of glory balances, with infinite weight, balances out whatever sufferings we have in this life. But this life is good, and lives are good. That every, when we talk about abortion in general, you're right, it gets very abstract. But we're talking about here millions of individual lives, little boys and girls, who have futures of experiences and hopes just like ours, some better, some worse experiences, but lives that are valuable nonetheless. And the pro-life movement is predicated on the idea that all life is valuable, that all human beings have equal worth and dignity, no matter what their particular life circumstances are.
Kenny, thank you very, very much for that call.
And have a blessed day.
You too. Have a blessed day. Again, we're giving away Persuasive Pro-Life, Trent's book, for free, or Making the Case for Life, his DVD for free. you just call and get on the line, and then we'll get your address and send it to you, 888-318-7884. You can hear the music, which means we're heading towards a break, but we continue on this 45th anniversary of the Roe versus Wade decision, a conversation about life, and about, particularly about abortion. If you are a pro-choice person and would like to share with us why you are pro-choice, the lines are open for you today. Just give us a call, 888-318-7884. For those of you who are joining us on Facebook or YouTube or Periscope, stay where you are. Trent's going to stay with us through the break, and we'll have a little between-the-hours conversation while we go to the radio break. 888-318-7884, the number. Why are you pro-choice? If you'd like to share that with us, give us a call. We'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.